Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. My name is Saiduddin Faridi. I'm a research analyst here, and I will be your host for today's episode on the Indian Budget 2024. India's Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman on the 1st of February presented her sixth Union Budget. This budget is an interim budget given India's upcoming general elections, which are likely to be held in the months of April and May of this year. The budget has continued the focus on fiscal consolidation and capex-led growth. And in her address, the minister also identified youth and women-centric issues as another focus of this budget. To discuss and unpack these aspects of the budget, we are joined by Mr. Subhamoy Bhattacharjee, coordinator at the Center for Maritime Economy and Connectivity in New Delhi, and a regular contributor for Business Standard. Mr. Bhattacharjee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Saeed.
I want to start off by asking you, what are your initial impressions of the budget?
Well, that's interesting because the initial impressions have all been very positive, and I'm also one of those. In fact, this is one of the budgets which I have said is India's sixth Grammy because it has got no false note. It just says what it needs to say. It doesn't get into areas where it doesn't shouldn't get into. And it recognizes that this is an interim budget. So the scope for music was limited. And that, I think, is something which, according to me, checks almost all the boxes for being a good budget.
Yes, I think you mentioned limited scope. And some of the conversations that have come out is that this is a little bit unlike other interim budgets because in 2019, for instance, we saw announcement of popular schemes like the PM Kisan Yojana. And generally, when we have a budget coming off at the heels of a general election, there are usually some populist measures to drive some voting considerations, electoral considerations. How do you compare this budget to other interim budgets? And if that is the case, does it reflect confidence on the part of the government?
Well, it does reflect confidence. There's no doubt. So how do I say it reflects confidence? Because as you saw, the budget had, like any budget, it had lots of announcements. But these announcements, none of them are as significant as one particular number, which the finance minister, Ms. Nirmala Sitharaman, announced, and which was the number about the fiscal deficit. Now, just to take a slight backgrounder on budgets, the Indian Constitution does not mention the word interim budget. It doesn't even mention vote on account. It simply says every year, the government will present to the parliament a record of its income and expenditure. And that is about what the budget is supposed to be. So there are 5 years. In 5 years, the government presents five budgets, which is fine. The interim budget is something which is therefore a very political budget by its very nature, because it basically gives the government of the day, as you pointed out, the opportunity to say what it will do. It's sort of, you know, not a goodie bag, but a taste of what could come in future. And that is what the budget, interim budget's main justification or focus is. Because after all, if the finance minister needs, the finance minister can simply present a statement to the parliament of the expenditure she or he would make in the 3 months till the elections happen. And that doesn't need a speech. So that brings on to the next part, which is that even the budget speech, whether in interim or in the regular budget, is not something which is an integral part of the budget. That budget speech is therefore a totally political document because it lays out the priorities of the party in power about what it wants to do in the year ahead, or as in the case of interim budget, about what it wants to do if it comes back to government to be after it possibly wins a majority. Because the speech, technically speaking, is again not a constitutional requirement. So, given all that circumstance, you're right about saying that the interim budgets before had, especially the 2019, had clearly said that this was a full budget, because it needed to make that assertion to make the people feel convinced that this government has more interesting things up its sleeves, and therefore it makes sense to announce them now and make the people hope that those would be followed up in subsequent in when the government comes back. That budget of 2009 also roughly followed the same pattern, where the finance minister then made the same pitch. In fact, the 2004 budget went so far as to actually make several tax concessions on indirect taxes, more than 50 odd, if I remember, on indirect taxes, that it went on and on, because it was making it very clear that this was meant to bring the marginal voters onto the polling, into the polling booth. So going by those comparisons, this particular budget was therefore absolutely different from the pattern. It made no announcements which can qualify as a new announcement. It said that there will be some things that will be done, but it didn't attach any expenditure like proposal along with it, and it simply left the tax issues untouched, as it should, because taxes are supposed to be raised by a government when it has got the majority in the parliament, and that is a full majority after an election. An outgoing government should not make any tax announcements. So therefore, this one was a totally different budget from what one had come to expect as an interim budget. And I must say, even savvy commentators were blindsided. Practically everybody expected this budget to have something to address to different constituencies, and to make those announcements, allocate money for those, even more make grandiose observations, and all none of those really happened. So yes, it was quite a different interim budget from any of the interim budgets that we have seen so far in recent years, and that's saying quite a lot.
Thank you for drawing all those very interesting insights from past budgets to sort of give us a context of how this budget is different. But I want to come back to the first thing you mentioned, which was fiscal deficit, which has been a major talking point around the budget as well. And as we know, it is an important economic indicator, which in a way reflects how much the government is borrowing. And the finance minister has expressed that the government is fairly committed to fiscal consolidation and has set another ambitious target of 5.1% for the coming financial year, after having exceeded the target for this year, exceeded in the sense that she has beat the target that they set for themselves. So how does the government plan to balance its expenditure and spending over the course of the next year to achieve this?
So you're right that the fiscal deficit number is very interesting. And let me say how usually a budget arrives at those numbers. In the budget exercise, the revenue department keeps on informing the about the latest income, about the latest tax positions, the latest revenue position, and projections for the remaining 1 or 2 or 3 months for the year, to give the sense of how much will be the total purse which the government will have. Simultaneously, different departments reach out to the finance ministry. They have meetings from about 3 months before the budget is to be placed, which are called the revised estimate meetings. And in those meetings, departments come up with their expenditure plans, which means that they basically have projects which they wish to see through. And along with it, they pencil in numbers of how much those projects will cost. So the finance ministry's department of expenditure keeps on balancing these two, the revenue and the expenditure numbers, and keeps on giving the sort of comes as the budget date comes closer, it gets a better sense of what will be the government's income and what will be the expenditure, and therefore to what extent the government, at least in the case of India, what will be the shortfall in terms of the revenue that has been generated. Based on that, the number of fiscal deficit is arrived at. Fiscal deficit is actually the gross aggregate deficit of the government, of the budget, between the revenue and the expenditure. And then it has also got some other deficit measures which give a better sense of what's in the budget. This includes what is called the revenue deficit, that is the difference between the revenue and the expenditure, just the revenue income and the revenue expenditure, and similarly the primary deficit, which is the deficit of how much the government is actually earning from its current income to run its current expenditure, to run its total expenditure. So essentially all of these give a nuanced picture of where the government's finances are. This budget, I'll go out on a limb to say that the 5.8%, I mean, it didn't come out of the thin air, but it came very, it was about the first one that was penciled in. The government, of course, was right through the year, as you could see, its income was looking very comfortable. The GST numbers for the years has settled above 1.60, and it's now looking that it'll cross 1.70 for the next year, but we are talking about 23, 24. So there's been a welcome surge in government revenue. But in any case, based on that number, there's also been an expenditure surge that was expected for subsidies on fertilizer, subsidies on food, defense, the pension. All of these taken together, the government could have had a problem in terms of meeting its expenditure. But what the government has done is it has sort of said that, no, for me, the fiscal deficit is very important, and has stuck to it at a very improved 5.8%. It could have actually said it's 5.9% because that was the budget estimate. Instead, it has improved it by 100 basis point to come up at 10 basis point to come up at 5.8%. And that means that it's exactly about, going by the India government's budget, that means it's roughly about close to 45 to 50,000 crore rupees better than what it would have been, one would have expected. So that is taking a huge plunge. And what I'm getting at is that the fiscal deficit number was about the first number that was penciled in. Once that was penciled in, all the other numbers got penciled in accordingly. So there's a, for instance, the discussion about the capital expenditure. The capital expenditure is growing, has been projected to grow in the new fiscal at 17%. So those numbers then follow from the conservatism that has been shown this time in the fiscal deficit number, 5.8%, and then going on to improving it even more to 5.1% for 24-25. And I promise that it will be actually be even more conservative at 4.5% by the year 25-26. And all of these are based on, therefore, making assumptions about running a very tight ship. So the capital expenditure has risen from the 10 lakh crore by just about 17%. And that is going by the run rate of this government in raising the capital expenditure by about more than 100% in the last 3 years. This is actually very conservative. But as I said, the government's intention was to show that it can keep the fiscal deficit under control. So we can discuss a bit more about that shortly, that why it was necessary.
Thank you for that answer, and that and in the way you put it, how it has been penciled in first, the fiscal deficit, and how everything else comes around it, kind of really explains a lot of the numbers here. But I want to also come to another aspect of the expenditure, which is welfare schemes. And in terms of welfare schemes, the budget has made some strides, and it has come with this acronym GYAN, which stands for Garib Yuva Annadata Nari, which is translates to poor, youth, farmer, and woman, respectively. So it kind of has this acronym going, and we have these initiatives coming in. However, we also see that spending on welfare schemes has either gone down or remained stagnant across other schemes. So how do you reconcile that? And are there some trends which are emerging here?
Yeah, as you can see, it is not that the government would be wanting to reduce the expenditure on health or in education. But what has important to remember this, that this is, as I said, an interim budget where global investors will be looking at how well the government is able to manage its finances. That was the most critical number, therefore, the fiscal deficit number was therefore the most critical number to show to the world that the government is, despite the opportunities, despite the temptation, the government will not walk that path. That is a very significant statement of intention. And that has, as I said, colored everything else. So the expenditure on every other sector has to be therefore seen as to what is being spent in the year ahead, which is the 9 months of the next financial year, which will be from June to February. So that is the time when the government will actually will be spending more. And obviously, they will want then to show its firepower in terms of its ability to spend on those sectors. So I would expect a jump rather than a decline in these expenditure. And that is exactly what one would also expect. But as I said, this time, the priorities were not those. So therefore, there is no intention or effort to bring those expenditures with gala numbers to show anything, because that number in any case can't be spent in, because you effectively have just January is already gone. So you effectively just have February and a little bit of March left by the time, and April is already consumed with election when no particular major expenditure can be made. So why unnecessarily show those numbers? And as we discussed right at the beginning, the government doesn't need to show that it is going hell for leather for to show that it is going to expend expenditure on health or on education in this short time to change the impression of the voters. It more or less believes that by keeping the ship of the state stable, to avoid unnecessary disturbance, which one major disturbance is inflation, it can actually instead make people more amenable to give credence to the government's management of the economy, rather than try to bring in numbers and instead and effectively ending up putting some expenditure into the market, which will just simply move to raise inflation rather than do anything substantive. So therefore, those numbers have not been changed. That is where it stands, and that is exactly what one should have been expecting. Because if they had done more, I mean, if they had spent more or tried to spend more, it would have just simply shown a government which is unsure of its standing, and would have led to more inflation and would have created more dislocation in the economy. For investors, it would have meant less reasons to be enthusiastic about the performance of the economy. So overall, a bad outcome.
Thank you for explaining that so well. I do want to come now to what are the indications for what the full budget might carry in June or July when the new government is formed, and what are perhaps some of the gaps that you see that a full budget which comes out later will have to address.
That's interesting. At this point, frankly, the interim budget, whether one reads it in detail, whether one reads it between the lines, whether one reads it and compares with previous budgets, frankly, doesn't give out any indication. And I'm saying this with a lot of sense of responsibility. Why so? Because Prime Minister Modi would want to create a new sort of, what I should say, paradigm for reaching out many of the schemes that would be necessary for the economy, schemes that would actually also push consumption, schemes that would lead to better health outcomes. But how it will be done and what will be the methods in which those would be done is frankly something that at this stage, it's impossible to get a sense from the interim budget. None of the schemes that are there on in the government books right now are those which are new. So which means that the expenditure on them and have been going on for years, And these simply ensure that the expenditure stays topped up, nothing more there. In terms of future, yes, you can see that by keeping the fiscal numbers, the fiscal position clear, the government is actually building itself up to be able to deliver on what is needed. Instead of looking at the budget, I would say it makes much more sense to look at on and off announcements that the Prime Minister has made about different schemes. For instance, one of the schemes that he has recently launched, which was the Vishwamitra scheme, that is the scheme to provide employment for skilled workers at the rural level, is a very new scheme. And that scheme, I suspect, will get a lot of traction going ahead. But again, this budget doesn't talk about it at all. But I suspect that that will be a scheme that will have a lot to say. Similarly, as you can see, there is a lot of work, background work that is going on insurance, life insurance as well as health insurance. So I would suspect that those are the areas where there'd be quite a bit of action in terms of what the BJP party would want to show as something that it'll be interested in. It has talked a lot about women, but while it has also set up, made its concern explicit by looking into why the labor force participation rate of women is low, those would also again will be something which it would be looking into, but again, as I said, with methods and systems that would start falling in place once the new government comes into power. Maybe a better sense of these sort of things can come by looking at, and what I'd say, I'd draw attention to that, by looking at reading up the Government of India's announcements about different sectors through its own handouts that come out regularly, you know, through the Press Information Bureau and others. Those give a much better sense of which way and what are the ways in which the new expenditure priorities of the government would line up, that they would line up in health, that they would line up in education, that they would line up in reducing malnutrition, that they would line up in getting more women employed. These are very obvious, but the specifics of how they'll happen will be apparent only when the schemes start getting drawn up clearly into specific details.
And I think that might be a good note to end this conversation. And I want to thank you for joining us for this talk and giving really good insights into what the budget has to offer. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. And I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. You were listening to South Asia Chat. You can find out more about our work on our website, isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also find us on social media. We are available on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.